Hey, it's episode 436 of the 343 podcast, and well, possession is king. It's always been king. For 100 years, it has been king. Yes, this is true. And look, as predicted, Spain and Argentina, possession kings, going up in the final. And look, the prediction of Spain or Argentina would have to be the ones to eliminate France materializes. This episode is all about the virtues of possession, a teaching episode for coaches, for parents, for media, for everybody under the sun, because that is what we are specialists at. Here we go. Speaking of possession being king, it is the best way to develop players at any age, at every level. So coaches, you should go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there based on the pioneering, remarkable work of Brian Kleiman here in the United States of America for over two decades. And he kind of made it a revelation to the Americans here that it could be done here in this environment. You get to be a witness as he coaches his teams. It's not live. It's not scripted. You get to be a fly on the wall and watch him train his own teams, his own players. There is no scripting here such as you would get it at a conference or a license or some sort of course. No, these are the actual players, the actual team, the actual competitions. And you get to see the activities, you get to see how he executes the activities, and you get to see the end result of all of that packaging. You get to witness the artist in action. So again, coaches, 343coaching.com is where you go. And parents, we've codified all of that in a parent education program for you at 343masterclass.com. You need to be able to discern in a much better way what is the best course of action for your son or daughter. So 343masterclass.com. And if you're coaching in the 7-versus-7 format, 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode on possession-based football and how it is king. It's always been king, and you're being misled if somebody tells you otherwise. Here we go.
I want to start right here, Gary, and the audience wants to know as well. How are you so fucking accurate on your predictions, man?
Well, which one was I accurate on? Oh, the Spain one?
You've been accurate on a lot this World Cup, man. On a lot.
Yeah, the Spain one.
Let me give you context as to why I say this.
The only way to beat this France is having possession of the ball. And I think Spain has the capability of holding possession of the ball. You can't bunker against France. You can't press France. You can't go toe-to-toe with them. I attack you, you attack me, I attack you, you attack me. You will lose in all those circumstances. So the only way is to defend with the ball. Have the ball. Spain has the capability of holding the ball. And they also have the experience of playing this French team many times, right? In the Euros, they have all this experience, so they know what they're up against. And they've been successful. Spain beats France.
I mean, a lot of people will probably already take issue with that because they're like, well, Spain already has beaten France, you know, the last handful of encounters that they've had. So nobody's a genius for picking Spain to win. And look, it's not that I picked Spain to win. I said Spain could beat this France because I also said that this France team is perhaps the best World Cup team I have ever seen. And I've been intimately analyzing and entrenched the game since 1986. I've seen all the World Cups since 1986. And I've broken, not just seen as a fan, Benny, but broken them down intimately. You know how you see tactical deconstructions nowadays, you know, people dedicate their entire online persona about trying to look at tactics and what did this coach do? What did that coach do? What did this team do? What did that team do? I have been doing that since I was 13 years old. So from the age of 13 to like 18, I don't want to say thousands, but it feels like I've done that thousands of matches, thousands of World Cup matches. So I also said that France is the best team that I have ever seen. And I still can, and not I've ever seen, I think it's the best one ever, Benny. And I still believe that to this day, even though Spain dog walked them yesterday, like it was a joke. It was a walk in the park for Spain. At least it looked that way. And so that gets us to our predictions where I said, yes, you know, Spain definitely is the one that can stop them aside from Argentina because of possession. And the only reason that I gave Argentina more of an edge than Spain is because Argentina has Messi, a special player, a difference maker, a magical player, and Spain doesn't have that. You know, they have that budding in Lamine Yamal, but I said Lamine is still a little kid. Is he 19? I think he's 19, right, Benny? And look, age usually isn't something that I think is a big deal. Obviously, when Messi was 19, he was lighting up world football, doing outrageous things already. But Lamine on the international stage with Spain, he had just come back from injury also, let's not forget, is not Messi. And that was also an accurate prediction from my perspective, because what did Lamine do yesterday against France? An important player. He distracts the opponent. He's dangerous. But he wasn't the guy. The team was the guy.
Yeah. We're going to talk a lot about Spain in this episode, but just real quick on France, what was it about the team that made you say this is the best World Cup that I've ever seen? And I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because I know what people are going to say in the comments. Well, Gary, if they were the best team, then why didn't they win? They're the best team you've ever seen, and they lost to Spain. So,
yeah, but I hope folks can understand. There's a simple answer to that. And people will also think it's a cop-out, because you can always say this about everything, but it's just a reality. This is football. The best team doesn't always win. And frankly speaking, yesterday, and probably generally, Spain is the better, quote-unquote, team. But if I look at France, France is, in one of my little solo walks, you know, when I was talking, I think it was after France versus Paraguay, and people were hating on Paraguay and how Paraguay, you know, did the dark arts and did a low block and all these sorts of things. I said, what do you want to do against this France team, which is comprised of basically Greek gods, right? And I kind of made a reference to Mount Olympus, right, in Greek mythology. And the gods are up there on Mount Olympus. And who are the gods? Mbappe, Olise, Dembele, Doué, Barcola, whatever. And they have these lightning bolts. And they look at humanity down there and they throw down lightning bolts. Like, that's why I'm saying that front, that attacking prowess is so outrageously potent that it's the scariest thing ever. Like ever. And remember, since 1986, I've been analyzing this stuff. So if I look at the Brazils, when they had Ronaldo, El Fenomeno, R9, the best striker in the history of all histories, they had Ronaldinho, they had, even if I go further, you think about Romario, you think about Beto, you think about that whole cohort, Roberto Carlos, Cafu. It was outrageous Brazilian team. It was scary, don't get me wrong. It's still not as scary as this France. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. But that does give you a little weakness in France, because they're so top heavy that basically the team is broken in two. It's the top heavy super attack of Greek gods. And then the other half is way back there, you know, trying to do a job of defending. But, you know, we'll see what happens. And Spain broke it.
So much that we can talk about on this game, Gary. First of all, Spain just absolutely bossed the game in the way that they kept the ball and the way that they made France run. I want to start with, for the audience sake, you know, I think a really good clip for you guys to see is Thierry Henry after the game, kind of explaining why Spain has had the success that they've had and why Spain was able to dominate this game. But one specific thing that he said on the field is, or he said after the game was, it doesn't matter which player for Spain is on the field, because every single one of the players knows their role, and they have known their role since they were 9 years old. So I want you to expand on that point right there, Gary. Since they were 9 years old, you and I have had numerous discussions about many problems in this country, but specifically in regards to team training and youth development. And you've been advocating for over two decades that in the team training environment, you should be training your team. It shouldn't be individual development. So I think when people hear, wait, kids in Spain at 9 years old are already learning shape and possession and where to stand and how to defend together in a collective, that sounds crazy. So just start there, Gary. I definitely want to get into yours and Brian's experience as well, traveling overseas and seeing what it's like over there in there. Youth systems and youth academies. But let's start right there with that comment. Every player knows their roles, Gary, because they've been doing it since they were 9 years old.
Yeah, it kind of goes against a lot of this silly American notion that's been circulating over the past handful of years about oh, youth soccer should be about, you know, individual, you know, training the individual or individual development. And what they have in mind there is basically letting the kids play, letting it be a free-for-all. You know, if a kid is dribbling like crazy, dribble, 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 it doesn't matter. You know, that's actually good for development. The coach should not be intervening in these sorts of things. You shouldn't be doing any sort of tactics or team-based stuff, you know, at these ages, at 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. You know, that's for later. Maybe once they're like 15, you can start talking to them about possession and stuff. Like, all of this has been circulating here in the United States, and it has done tremendous damage to the education of parents, to the education of coaches who are well-meaning coaches and want to do good work and really want to do good work, because we can talk about the other ones, and has done tremendous damage to the children and the kids because you're not getting developed. The way you develop the individual when you have a team, you develop the individual within the framework of the team. Team training, your club team, is a team. You're supposed to teach the kids how to operate within a team. Now, if you want to learn how to do stepovers and, you know, maximize your technical capabilities, your flashiness capabilities, your magic, because that's the other avenue they say, well, we don't have special players in the United States. We don't have magical players like Messi, Neymar, Ronaldinho, Lamine Yamal, or whatever. It's because the coaches don't allow it to happen. No, you know how those guys developed their specialness and their magic? They did it outside of the team training environment. That is where they did it. Which brings us to Thierry Henry's comment about the Spanish national team and that those players have been doing this Spanish football, right? And they knew their role since the age of 9 in Spain, because in Spain, and mind you, almost around the entire globe, but it just so happens that Spain has really got it dialed in Spain, since the age of 8, 9 years of age, they teach the kids how to play football, and football is a team game. So what do they do? They do things like rondos. What's the objective of a rondo? To develop your technique, to develop your movement off the ball, to develop your mental acuity, right? And there's a tactical component to rondos, and that's a whole other can of worms. But that gives you the instrument to then also build out of the back. So they teach the kids how to build out of the back. Yes, at 9 years of age. And then how to transition from the back to midfield, and then how to transition from the midfield up to the attack. And they show you patterns of play. They don't. It's not like calling plays in American football. Okay, wide receiver, you're going to do this route, you know, and tight end, you're going to do this block, you know, and the quarterback's going to loop around this way. It's not scripted like this in the match, but you teach the kids patterns of play. Why does that help? It helps because they get to then recognize it eventually on their own in the matches and execute fundamental principles of football. So that's what Thierry Henry was talking about. Benny, hopefully we can kind of insert this video where he says these sorts of things.
That's what I'm trying to say to you, is it doesn't matter if Baena plays, if it's Nico Williams, if it's whoever it is, they know what they need to do since they are 9 years old. So it doesn't matter who comes, who doesn't come in, they know. That's what I'm talking about. Who are you? What's your philosophy? What's your identity? So when the guy comes in, even if it's first cap, second cap, or third cap, he knows the system because they play in the same system. It's pretty simple, right? When you hear about it and when you see what they did. But you need to think about it.
So yeah, when it comes to the Spanish national team and the clubs in Spain, obviously, every kid knows how to play football. And our kids don't know how to play football.
Wait, Gary, but all those things, I didn't hear you say anything about stepovers and dribbling through cones. When are the Spain kids going to have time to do that, bro?
Good God. Yeah, guys, wait. So you know the answer to this. Maybe you can tell the audience. That way I'm not ranting the whole time. Where do you develop the sauce, right? Hear the Americans say, oh, he's got sauce.
Of course. Well, one, you play pickup. You play with your friends. You play futsal. Individual work needs to be done outside of the training environment. Like you said, the sauce needs to come from playing on your own, watching football, pickup, going to the park and playing with your friends. That's where the sauce comes from, man. The rest is all just the foundational.
Yeah. And it's not like in the team training environment, you can't like be encouraging that as a coach. You do. And we do encourage that stuff. But right place, right time, right context, right? So we love our players, the players who are quote unquote special or show potential for being special because they have been working outside of the team training environment. They do have some of this sauce already when they come to us at 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, whatever it is. So those sorts of players in matches or in our training, when they show these sorts of things, if they're doing it in the offensive third, you know, when they need to do something special to break lines or to meg somebody or something like that, we applaud that. We like that. Okay. But if they're trying to do that when clearly the obvious correct decision was something else, then it's like, hey, look, man, we love that. We want to see you doing these sorts of things, but right place, right time. Don't be trying to meg somebody in your own 18-yard box when we're, I don't know, losing the game 1-0, you know, or 2-0, or whatever it is, and you're trying to do a rainbow step over scissor, God knows what stupid thing you're doing there. Don't do that. Or, hey, center back, that's not what you do. You're a center back. You probably will always be a center back. And I know people take issue with that also, but bear with me here. You will always be a center back. So you are not going to be Neymar when you're an adult playing college soccer, playing professionally, or playing whatever. You're not Neymar. You are not Neymar. You're not going to be Neymar. You are a center back. So as a center back, you don't do that stuff.
And that's instilled in the kids from day one, right?
Yeah.
Why do you think, I mean, you're an expert on this, Gary. You've been facing this problem for the last 20 years, but why has U.S. soccer, or you can generalize it and say American soccer, why have we been so against possession soccer and rondos? And no, rondos are the devil, right? We had a whole discussion on why U.S. soccer says rondos are no good. They're no directional. Well, guess what, guys? Spain does rondos every single day since the time they're 8 years old. And look at what they're producing on the field.
So does France. So does Holland. So does Portugal. So does, like, go on. And England, by the way, England is enjoying a lot of success nowadays, and their national team is better. The youth and the adult and everything about the English player has gotten better in the past decade or so. Guess why? Because they imported and they're finally started accepting, hey, the Spanish methodology, this other methodology, the possession-based stuff is superior. It is better. This is how it's more fundamental as opposed to kick and run, kick and chase, big, fast, strong player profiles, route one soccer. They finally said, we've been wrong. You guys are all right. And now they're starting to pump out proper players and have a proper youth national teams and have proper national teams and have proper club teams. And it's not a coincidence that a lot of this happened because of what Barcelona did during Pep Guardiola's era, because it was too bloody obvious. Benny, he made it so goddamn obvious that you can't deny it. And then Pep goes to Manchester City and stays there for 9 years, where the English media and the English people said, haha, now we're going to see what a fraud this guy is. You can't do it here in England. The Premier League is different. And what did the guy do? He shut everybody's mouth. And that helped, again, foster a revolution in English football. So you asked me about American soccer. Well, American soccer historically has been largely almost exclusively influenced by England. So it was big, fast, strong, route one, trade punches back and forth. That's exciting football, by the way. Okay. And then the casuals here in American soccer, and by casuals, you know what I mean by casuals. MLS fans are casual. Almost everybody's here is a casual, except for the ones who have a soccer first heritage. The casuals who are used to NFL, NBA, you know, the traditional American sports, they like big, fast, strong, because that's something that they understand. They like route one, long balls, kick and chase, action, 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 action. That's what they like. So that gets reinforced, okay, and gets carried over into the youth game here in the United States. It gets carried over into college soccer. It gets carried over into professional soccer here in the United States, versus the opposite of that, which is illustrated by Spain. Pass, 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 pass. So what does the American think? This is so boring. You've probably heard it already with this Spanish team. Yeah, they're super good and stuff, but it's boring. So that is probably the cultural opposition to this development methodology, to this type of football. And then there's another component, Benny. Here, I'll write it down for me because maybe you want to chime in because I have a whole other rant as to why there's opposition to this.
Keep going, Gary, because I was going to bring up the topic of the best athletes, but I want to keep everything together. So keep going on your rant.
Okay. So the second piece to this puzzle is it's not easy to train this way and to deploy this methodology. You have to have competence as a coach and a lot of competence. And it is a multi-year coaching development trajectory for a person to reach a level of coaching competence where they can successfully do this and feel good about themselves, okay? Versus what they have been doing historically is not coaching, frankly speaking. They don't have a team training methodology. It's all individual based. So a coach who's incompetent would rather do things like lay out cones. Okay, kids, dribble between the cones. How anybody on planet Earth can do that. Lay out cones a yard apart or 5 yards apart or whatever it is and have kids do something through the cones. Anybody can do that, Benny. Anybody. Or line up kids and have them shoot on goal. Anybody can do that. Or sit there and, quote unquote, let the kids play and let the game be the best teacher and have that narrative for any would-be parent or customer who comes at you and says, hey, this is weird. Like, you're not even coaching. You're just, like, letting them do whatever they want around here. It's always pickup soccer here. You're always scrimmaging. You're always doing these small-sided games. The coach can always say, well, Karen, you have to let the kids play. That's part of the problem in American soccer, Karen, is overcoaching of the kids. And since we've been overcoaching the kids for so many years, that's why our national team sucks, you know? So the key is you have to let the game be the best teacher. That's what we've been doing wrong in this country, Karen. We have not been letting the kids play, and we've not been letting the game be the best teacher. So they have this whole narrative to sidestep their responsibility of developing themselves as a coach and doing the hard work of developing the kids and developing the team.
Fucking Karen, man. Is Karen Johnny's mom, bro?
Maybe she's going to be our avatar for the parent.
I think she should be, bro.
Okay.
Get into the whole myth of our best athletes play other sports. And it seems like a lot of people are starting to realize that this is not the problem, right? Because I've seen a lot of people start calling, like, what's the guy's name? The fucking still Presidente guy, Dave Portnoy. Like, he went on the whole rant, and I saw a lot of opposition to which I've never seen before, right? Usually people throw that out, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's actually a good point. Maybe, yeah, that makes sense. But now, this time around, people are throwing it out, and a lot of people are calling it out. No. That's not the case. That's not the case. So France clearly had the better athletes, Gary. Clearly. So why was Spain able to be so dominant?
Yeah, there it is. The solution is possession. And part of how you opened the episode, Ben, of my prediction is I said the key to beating this France is through possession. If you have the ball, they cannot hurt you. That's how you defend. You don't defend like Paraguay defended, which is low block and, you know, hopefully France doesn't score. And you don't defend like Japan did against Brazil, which was the same thing. And look what happened to those two teams. They eventually lose the game. The best way to defend is with having the ball. The longer you have the ball, the less probability that they have on goal and scoring goals on you. And the longer you have the ball, the higher the probability that you might score a goal. That's how fundamental possession is. So Mbappe, Olise, Dembele, Barcola, Doué, that whole group couldn't do anything. And by the way, the more you have possession, when the other team gets possession, in this case, France, they could be devastating on the counterattack, which is a counter to possession, obviously. But the longer you have possession, the more tired the opponent gets because they're chasing things around. They don't have a full tank of energy anymore. And when you lose possession, the other team is kind of discombobulated. It's harder for them to get into a rhythm and hold it for themselves. That transition is very chaotic. And France and Spain is very good at counter-pressing when they lose possession. Why? Because one of the keys of being a possession-based team is that you're kind of close together. You know, it's easier to connect 10, 15-yard passes, 5-yard passes. So when you're connecting 5, 7, 10, 15-yard passes, you know, amongst 4, 5, or 6 of you, when you lose possession, the 4, 5, or 6 of you are right there already where the ball got lost. And you compress on the space, and then France, being the other team, it's harder for whoever regained possession to connect and get out of that pressure. It's so fundamental, Benny.
Yeah, man, France was suffocating, man. And a clear example of that is the second goal. I think it was maybe a buildup of 12 to 14 passes. Then Rodri tried to play a ball in behind, but the defender cleared it. But because Spain was in perfect shape, everybody knew exactly where to be. Ball bounces right back to them. They're able to redistribute. Little combination, go to goal. And when you watch it, Gary, it looks so simple, but there's so much going on that to the average eye, you would have no idea. But to a casual fan just watching, it's like, oh, well, that was a very simple goal. Oh, wow, Spain's playing, you know, very well. But there's so many details and layers that goes into the movement, the timing, the weight of the pass, where you specifically play the pass, right? Are you playing it to your teammate's front foot or back foot? That's like a little minute detail that people don't even realize, man.
Front foot, back foot, like you said, the weight of the pass, and away from pressure. Like you're so good that you see, okay, I need to pass it here and I see the Frenchman right there. I have to pass it on this side of my teammate, you know, away from the Frenchman. You know, you don't connect them straight, but it's such minutia. And you get this through the methodology, through the rondos, through what these Spaniards have been going through since they were, again, like Henri said, since they were 9 years old.
Again, Gary, just like in the Charundel episode that we were trying to plug all the holes, I want to plug all the holes that people are going to come out and
okay,
say.
Okay, do it.
People are saying, or people will say, right? Oh, well, rondos, Gary. You're just standing in a little square, keeping possession. Like, how is that going to help the players be able to move off the ball?
Yeah.
What the fuck? You know, it's not directional. No, I'm not going to do that in my sessions because U.S. Soccer said I shouldn't. So,
yeah.
Talk to me about rondos, Gary.
Sure, a little bit. Well, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding and misguided notions and a lot of misinformation and a lot of disinformation associated with the methodology, in particular rondos. First and foremost, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of different types of rondos. It's not just get players kind of around in a circle or in a square and play keep away, because that's the most rudimentary, misguided notion about a rondo. That's total nonsense. You don't know what a rondo is. There's all kinds of variations, as I said. You mentioned movement off the ball. Almost every single rondo, I would say probably every single one actually, has movement off the ball. It is a requirement to be moving off the ball. If you want to talk about a 4v1 rondo, the simplest of all, otherwise we're going to get super complicated here with 4v4 plus 3 and all these sorts of other variations. People can do their own homework. If you have a simple 4v1, you've got, like a square box that you construct. You know, there's corners of the box and 4 players, one on each side of that square, and then a defender in the middle. Great. So let's have one player who's on a side of a square have the ball. The other two adjacent sides of the square, those players have to show themselves, have to move off the ball to offer a passing lane to your teammate who has possession. You have to do that. Otherwise, the rondo is going to fall apart. You're going to lose possession and it's not going to be successful. And you're not developing yourself for movement off the ball. So this is where a coach has to kind of teach properly and proper movement off the ball and offer the proper passing angle to your teammate. Then your teammate has to make a decision. Do I go left? or do I go right? Well, then they have to have the awareness of, well, where is the defender? Which one of those two is the correct decision to make? You see, brain activation already. Then secondly, when you execute the pass, you have to execute the pass with the right weight and right speed of the ball. Too fast, and your whole team might lose possession because the receiver won't be able to control it. Too slow, and the ball won't get to your receiver in time, and the defender will close down space, and the rondo collapses probability. It has to be just the right weight of the pass. Look at everything that's being taught already. Second, or thirdly, or fourthly, what foot are you going to pass to your teammate to? Is it going to be the far foot or the front foot? Well, under what conditions are you going to do that? Do you know whether your teammate is left-footed or right-footed? First off, that shouldn't make too much of a, shouldn't be the primary calculation that you do. The primary calculation is, where's my defender? Okay. But a secondary, maybe, or tertiary is, could be something like that. You see, it goes levels deep on this. And then once you execute the pass, now you should move off the ball to offer yourself a passing angle again. Look at it, and this is the simplest of all rondos. Look at everything that is being trained. And the player on the opposite side of the square, that player obviously is not participating in that whole decision tree that I just laid out, but they are participating in recognizing, where is this pass going to go? And based on that decision, already start moving off the ball to offer the passing lane to whoever's going to receive the pass. So you're thinking about two passes ahead of time.
Everybody on the field, man.
Everybody is fully engaged. And that's in possession. And the player who's defending, that's a whole other story. How do you defend? The decision-making and defending. Do I press this guy? Do I fake pressing this guy? Do I close off this passing lane and I force this guy to pass it over here and then I'm going to press? There's all kinds of things there.
Thinking defense while you're on offense. So yes. There's another layer. Mm-hmm. Where do I need to be in case my team loses the ball in order to maintain my shape for the team?
Yeah. And that is the simplest of all rondos. Imagine now you create bigger rondos. And people like to publish, oh, here's the 4v4 plus 3. And they just see a bunch of shit happening, but they don't understand all the layers. Let's stick with the 4v1, okay? Look at everything I just described and imagine yourself that you're a new coach or a coach who has not done this exercise or a coach that is all about let the kids play and the game is the best teacher and all that. Imagine you're that guy. And how are you going to teach all this stuff? Because it's one thing for me to just verbalize it. That guy can verbalize it too. But then you actually have to connect with the kids, engage with the kids, see what's happening, correctly discern what's going wrong, correctly discern what player knows these things and what player doesn't know these things, and to what level each of these different players know these things. And then motivate the players to execute and get better and better and better. And then maximize the intensity. And then know how big the actual grid should be. Should it be this big or should it be this big? Because depending on the level of the players, you increase or decrease the grid size. And it's an art. It's a craft. And it takes years to master as a coach.
Yeah. Just one specific example for the audience. I've been doing 4v1 rondos for 10 years now, and I'm still not at the perfect level that I want to be. There's still, every time I do it, I'm noticing little intricacies that I hadn't noticed before. And so, and again, like you said, that's the most basic rondo, Gary. Imagine when you layer on the more complex topics. As a coach, you need to have a good understanding of what it is that you're actually trying to accomplish in the rondo so that you can communicate to your players when they're doing the actions correct and when they're not doing it right. If you don't have that understanding, then potentially you could be giving bad information to your players, right?
Totally, totally. And even masters, Benny, at this sort of stuff, this is why you have assistant coaches, because one individual can be supervising an entire team of players doing this activity and maximizing everything. And further, one person can't be judging individual performances throughout a training session. You need multiple eyeballs who are also very sophisticated, hopefully, to help you out. You know, there's always this story of that I keep remembering. I think it was Ferguson, Sir Alex Ferguson. I think it was him. And he basically said that he doesn't run the training sessions. His assistants run the training sessions. His job, right, and this enables him to step back. He doesn't lay out cones. He doesn't give instructions. He just is a spectator. And he's looking at the individuals, and he's assessing the individuals. Because when game time comes, and he doesn't know whether he should be starting player A or player B versus Chelsea, he's not sure. He's able to just sit back and watch the training session and watch player A and player B, put them under the microscope, and then make a good determination of who's better, who's ready, who's going to get the job done.
And guys, don't run off with that idea and get your assistant coach to run every single one of your sessions.
Totally.
And be sitting there in your lawn chair. The parents come to him and like, oh, well, this is what Alex Ferguson does. So
yeah,
that's not an excuse to be lazy, guys. This is the fucking highest level that we're talking about there.
Yeah. So now look how complex this is. Look how complex just the simplest of all rondos is. And then let's expand. Now you have to teach your team how to build out of the back. A lot of complexities. And then how do you teach your team to transition into the midfield? A lot of complexities. And how do you maximize that? How do you get them to actually learn? How do you get the players to actually develop and understand and then transition into the attack? So all of this packaged into a nice little box, Benny, to try to illustrate how difficult it is to be a good coach, or let alone a great coach. And so then we have the cohort of American coaches who can't do this and might have tried once, and they're so overwhelmed, and it doesn't work right for them, because in the very beginning, it might not work for them. And then they lean back and resort back or fall back to, fuck that, that's all bullshit, because I'm going to get found out. I'm going to get found out that I'm a fraud. And so what do I do to survive? I have to lean on this narrative that the game is the best teacher, let the kids play. Doing all that other stuff is what's bad for development. What's good for development is not doing all of this stuff that we've been discussing, Benny. And so they peddle that narrative to the parents. They peddle that narrative through their social media channels. And it's a survival mechanism. And some of them might be doing it consciously, or it started consciously, but then it becomes a subconscious thing, or it was always a subconscious thing. It's a cope for their incompetence. And that's where we are, Ben. That's where we are.
Yeah. Oh, man, American coaches operate in a system where they're forced to win, right? And so imagine if you're a new coach taking over a team, okay, and you have man-childs on your team, okay? Possession is the way. You know possession is the way. And so for a month, you start trying to train your team possession, but you're losing. You lost on Saturday. Next week, you lose again. You lose again. Well, now you start feeling pressure from the parents who are saying, what's up with all this passing bullshit? You know, I'm describing the typical suburban American parent. If people don't believe me, I've heard that before. Okay. What's up with all this passing bullshit? Hit the ball up, get the ball up to our best athletes, and let them run and let them score. And so in the back of the coach's mind, they're like, all right, well, they're still young. I'll be able to teach them next year how to, you know, build out of the back. And then it doesn't happen. Next year, maybe I'll teach them how to do attacking patterns. But they feel so much pressure to win, Gary, because if they don't, players leave their team and then they don't have a job anymore. So why are they going to struggle with possession, learning how to coach possession for 5 years, 6 years, when they want immediate results? And that's part of the culture here, is like, everybody wants to fuck. Of course, everybody around the world wants to win. But here it's like, if you don't win, you lost your job, players are leaving. Okay. And so, yeah, man, people don't want to struggle and people don't want to learn how to actually coach possession, because it is a process. Like you said, it takes years and years and years of coaching it and developing it and actually understanding it before you get a good grasp of it.
Yeah. A few things there. First off, it takes years and years and years to become a really good coach, and a really good coach of this methodology and with these exercises, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. what doesn't necessarily take that long is starting to see results with your team once you start deploying the methodology. I'll give you some examples, okay, and some exceptions to the rule. If you have a team that is not the best team, you don't have the man child necessarily to launch up there, and the other teams have the man child, then giving your team this structure of building out of the back, of holding possession, just like Spain versus France yesterday, it neutralizes to a certain degree the superior opponent that you're facing, the better 11-year-olds that you're facing this weekend. You know, you neutralize them to a certain extent when you have the ball and they don't. Okay. And with even phase one of our methodology, Ben, thousands of coaches have gone through it at this point over the past 10 years. And I've gotten countless testimonials of that within, and I kind of already said this before, within 6 months, you already start seeing a team on the weekends. You start seeing, oh, wow, the kids are building out of the back. They literally are, you know, doing some stuff here. And the results come shortly after then. And it's even easier, again, through testimonials and our own personal experience, it's even easier to deploy and implement the lower the level that you are at. The worse the players you have, the more likely you'll start seeing results and you can deploy this methodology. Why is that? Because the lower level you are at, the lower the level that your opponents actually are at also. Your opponents have no idea what to do, about how to play football, and neither do your players. So just giving your players a little bit of structure, a little bit of understanding, goes an incredibly long way. Versus when you're trying to deploy this methodology at the highest of all levels, your opponents are also very high-level players, very smart players already, just intrinsically. Then it gets more, the margins of error are smaller. Then it gets more difficult for you as a coach to implement this with your team and quickly get results.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up because I don't want coaches to think that this is impossible, right? It's not impossible. And like you said, the lower the level your team is, the quicker that you're going to see results. And there's thousands of people that have used this method, yours and Brian's specific methodology, Gary, and can attest to this, that yes, it does work. It does work. But I want to get to another rebuttal of what I know people are also going to say. They're going to say, well, Gary, Benny, this all sounds great. Possession, cool. But we don't have the players here in America. We don't have Lamine Yamal's, Gary. We don't have Danny Olmo's. We don't have Rodri, okay? But we can have the players, and we should have the players, but we don't. And I would advise the audience, especially if you're new here, go to our YouTube page. Or actually, you're already on our YouTube page. Click on our profile, go to game matches, and watch Brian's team of American kids playing against Barcelona and going toe-to-toe with them.
Playing this way.
Not launching it forward and running with our best at. No. Playing this way, going toe-to-toe with the best team in the world, the best academy in the world.
We do have the players.
We do have the players, guys.
We absolutely do have the players. And the reason that most folks don't believe that we have the players is twofold. At the youth level, if they're watching youth, they think that we don't have the players because most people, most coaches, most youth clubs around the country don't have the competence to deploy this. And so you don't see it happening. That's number one. Number two is even if at the pro level. So if you watch the pro level, oh, then why does the national team do this or whatever? Never mind that Pochettino's team did show a lot of flashes of it because he started deploying this sort of stuff. But if you look at MLS matches or college or whatever, and you don't see Spain, right? Or you don't see Barcelona, the natural conclusion is, oh, we don't have the players. Well, two things there. First, again, coaching incompetence. And secondly, the higher level you go, the players that get elevated to the next level, the players that get selected to MLS teams or, you know, Americans or whatever, that get selected to the national teams and elevated, platformed, aren't these types of players. And so naturally, the common person will be like, well, I don't see them, Gary. Where are they? Yeah, they weren't elevated. Because that type of player profile, the Rodri player profile, okay? Or Dani Olmo player profile or the player profile of Spain isn't elevated. You know which player profile is elevated? The player profile of France. We see the lightning speed, the thunderbolts, Usain Bolt. That's the guy. Let me get that guy right there, and I'll teach him the soccer. It doesn't work that way, guys. It's too late. He's 17, 18, 19, or 15, 16, 17, right? It's over. He hasn't been taught the soccer since he was 9. It's over. So even if you pick the Usain Bolt at age 16, which they do, or at 18 for MLS, which they do, it's too late. You're not going to develop the technique that you see on Spain. You're not going to develop the game intelligence that you see in Spain. You're not going to develop the culture and the wittiness and the dark arts that you see in Argentina. It's over. You're not going to get Jordan Morris to have those qualities. It's gone.
What would you recommend to American soccer to take from Spain? Because I know some of the commentary as well will be like, oh, well, we shouldn't try and be Spain, right? Spain is Spain. They have their own cultural identity. We're here in the U.S. Yes, okay, if you want to play possession, but what can we take from Spain and apply it here to the U.S. to where it's not like, all right, let's become Spain. Let's become the Spain national team here in America. Does that make sense, Gary?
Yeah. Okay. So get me back to that as soon as I'm going to ease my way in, but I don't want to lose your ultimate question there. Let's do a little thought experiment here for the audience and between us. If I get a college team and people think college sucks, right? Okay. That's why I'm picking a college team. Get a college team and have them play against a high school team. How's that game going to go?
High school team gets smashed.
High school team gets smashed. Why do they get smashed? Well, a lot of people will immediately go to the physical thing. Oh, bigger, faster, stronger. I want you to think a little bit more about that. Who's going to have more possession? College team's going to have more possession. How much more possession? An outrageous amount more possession. Okay. Well, why is that? People might resort again to the physical stuff, okay? But a college player can play a 20-yard pass and a high school player can play a 20-yard pass. They both can do the 20-yard pass, but who's going to do it better? The college team, and you might come into experience. This might be a bad example, Benny. Let's eliminate the age thing, okay? Let's get a top U14 American team and a low-level U14 American team. Who's going to have more possession?
Top team.
The top team. Why? Because they're better technically. Because they have better decision-making. That's why. So possession is an indicator of who is better technically and who is better tactically, who understands the game better. So if that's true, then guess what? That's what we should be teaching so that the players can get better technically and they can get better tactically. So who should we be as a country, Ben? That's a separate question. What we should be doing at the youth level, though, is teaching possession-based football because that is what develops the player's technique. That is what develops the player's brains. That is a lot more complex and requires more skill than kicking a ball 30 yards and running and doing that over and over again. So that's what we should do as an entire country because guess what? That's what the rest of the fucking world does also. It's like the rest of the world understands this and we don't. And for the folks in the audience who said, well, that's not true, Gary. I read an article and in Holland, they do this or Ajax does that. You're incorrect. You read a stupid article. You read an article where a academy director of Ajax or PSV or whatever, Frankfurt said, well, we developed the individual player. We don't care about results. It's not about team, you know, development at the youth level. It's about developing the individual. And you misinterpreted that to think, you know, teach the isolated skills for the individual. You misinterpreted. The way they develop the individual is through the team training environment that I just discussed. So they're not lying to you. They're saying the truth. They care about the individual at the youth level. Absolutely 100%. But the way they develop the individual is what we've just been talking about through the team context. They're not isolating the kids. Okay, you go over there. That guy over there is going to be teaching you how to do stepovers. This guy over here is going to be teaching you how to do a pirouette. That guy over there is going to be teaching you how to zigzag in and out. This guy's going to teach you how to do a megging. That's not what's happening. And they're not just letting the kids play. And the game's the best teacher. You're misinterpreting the stupid article because you have a journalist or reporter who is not an expert in these things reporting and writing stuff that he knows nothing about and not placing proper context. So back to your question, well, should we be spaying? What's our identity? No, let's segregate. That's how you develop players. And now we can talk about the national team level. What should we be at the national team? Well, I think a lot of that comes down to the coach. Number one, how does the coach want to play? Secondarily, if you want an identity, it doesn't necessarily have to be a playing style identity either. It's a cultural thing. If you look at Argentina, they're a possession-based team, but that's not what it is the identity necessarily. The identity is more like we have the biggest hearts. We don't want to ever lose. Losing is outrageously painful. We care more about not losing than about winning, if that makes sense. Like when we win, it's not like we celebrate. It's not because of the victory, right? That we feel it. It's because we didn't lose. Losing is psychologically traumatic to Argentines. So that's kind of their identity, and they deploy all the dark arts. Brazil is a possession-based team. What's their distinction? Samba, at least historically, but for 10 years, you haven't seen any samba, and that's why Brazil sucks now. Germany is a possession-based team. But what type? Very robotic. It's not tango, it's not samba, it's machine-like. A bunch of little Terminators. Precision. That's fucking Germany. France is a possession-based team. What's their distinction? Lightning bolt attacks. They're not samba. They're not dark arts. They're not machines. They're lightning bolts. Who's the other semifinalist?
England.
England. Oh, England, I just told you, they had a transformation. They used to be kick and chase, kick and chase, kick and chase. Serve the ball into the box. Serve it into the mixer. Something good might happen. Get stuck in, right? Studs up. Yeah, go on, lads. You know, rah, rah, cheer, cheer. That used to be England. England isn't that anymore. They learned. So what are they now? They're a possession-based team. What's their distinguishing feature or characteristics? Well, they finally have a couple of special players that they rely on. I can't say that they have like an identity like the other ones we just went through, but they have a couple of special players. They have Harry Kane and they have Jude Bellingham. And Jude Bellingham, I told you in our last live stream, I think is the best player in the world. My opinion, people might think I'm crazy. And it's not because he scored two goals in the quarters and two goals, you know, in the round of 16 or whatever it is. That's not why. So they have two special players and they're surrounded by a cast and it's a possession-based team and they have a German coach now. So if anything, they're a little bit more machine-like. I kind of see a little Germany in England. So what should the United States be, Benny? Well, I think it has to be an organic sort of thing that crops up. It can't be mandated from the top, which was what these Americans have been trying to do. We must mandate you guys do this, that, and the other thing. No, it has to be organic. And let's not go into this rabbit hole again, but how do things become organic? You let an exchange of ideas, you let a competition of ideas flourish. And the only way a competition of ideas can exist is if you have an open ecosystem and let the best ideas win.
Bro, we could literally do a 24-hour stream on possession soccer. And
yeah.
Because there's so much to talk about, man. There's so much to talk about. But going back to individual player development, I know you've heard this argument thousands of times over the last 20 years. Gary, Brian, you're killing the creativity of the players. You're telling them exactly where to pass and where to stand. You're creating robots. I think you were the one that actually coined the phrase robots in American soccer. You're the one that said that, right? Robots. We have robots here in American soccer. But Gary, you're killing their creativity. You're not letting them express themselves, their identity. What the fuck is wrong with you, Gary?
Yeah. And maybe we can end with this one, right? Because Argentina is going to play in a little bit and we're at the hour mark and we can do a part two. But again, who are the people saying that and why are they saying that? We covered that in this episode previously. Why is there this immune system against possession-based soccer? Why are they saying these sorts of things against possession-based soccer? It's a lot of brainwashing. It's a lot of cope and et cetera, et cetera. The answer, okay, is we're actually enabling the players to be creative and express themselves. How are we doing that? We're doing that by offering them a structure of stability, a team that has a structure that is stable, where you're going to get a lot of touches on the ball, a lot of opportunities for creativity, a lot of opportunities for freedom of expression. And we give you the time and place for when you can try to be Neymar. And we encourage you to try to be Neymar in the correct time, in the correct place, if that's what people are thinking about creativity. The other aspect of creativity that usually people don't understand or comprehend is the stuff that doesn't look creative. It's the stuff that doesn't look flashy or isn't flashy. It's Rodri of Spain, or it's Busquets of Barcelona fame and Spain fame. Doesn't look like they're creative players, but they're outrageously creative. What type of creativity? Decision-making creativity. So the players, the youth players in a possession-based system, when they're going to receive, they're already being creative. They're already making decisions in the field. What should I do? What are my options? And which one is the best option? So there's a lot of decision-making and you can be creative about that decision-making. We're not telling you, you get it here, you pass it there. You get it here, you pass it there. Not at all, because we can't control what happens in the game, Benny. Every single game is different. Every single action in every single game is different. The opponent's shape is different at all moments in time. Your team shape is different at all moments in time. So the player has to make different decisions every single time. So all we're doing is reducing the scope, right, of possible decisions. We're taking infinity, right, and saying, hey, look, you're a right back. These are usually the seven things that happen for a right back. Now it's up to you to decide amongst those seven sort of things what to do.
So complex, man. So yeah. Many layers to it.
Yeah. And but think about that versus the alternative. The alternative is let the kids play, let them do whatever they want. And so what does that turn into? Well, you all know what that turned into. You see it on the weekends every day. It's like, I kick it that way, they kick it back this way. I kick it that way, they kick it back this way. Or I dribble, 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 lose it, and they dribble, 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 and they lose it. And it's just chaos all over the field is the alternative. So we're eliminating the chaos, bringing some structure and order so that the players can actually engage with their brains. That's how you become creative. If you were thinking about the other type of creative, the scissors, the stepovers, and all that stuff, again, I repeat, that is what pickup games are for. That is what outside of the competitive youth club environment is for, outside of team training environment is for. That's where you develop that quote unquote creativity and then are better capable of doing it in your team training environment and gain the confidence of your coach in the team training environment to give you even more freedom to express yourself. Oh, well, Gary, there's no pickup soccer here in America, blah, 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 blah. There is pickup soccer somewhere. And if your kid can't get to it, that sucks. No question about it. Can your kid kind of develop these sorts of skills or whatever on their own and not in pickup soccer? To a certain extent. I've discussed many times the five components to player development, right? The player household, the household environment, the solo environment, the team training environment, the blah, 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 blah. Kind of, you can kind of work on that on your own. But just because kids don't have necessarily a pickup environment, are we then going to transform team training into pickup soccer? Is that what you're suggesting? Because it sounds like that's what they're suggesting, right? Oh, well, let's just make travel soccer or competitive youth club soccer, pickup soccer. I mean, but that's what they're suggesting. Okay, if you admit that that's what you are doing, fine. But let's admit it. And to a certain degree, I'm okay with that if everybody's on board with that. If you want to turn it into pickup soccer, okay, it's pickup soccer. Well, guess what? Now you're playing, you're paying club fees, $2K, $3K, $5K, $10K a year for pickup soccer. But don't, which is awesome, but don't expect your kid to develop like the Spaniards develop and like the French develop and like the Dutch develop or the Portuguese develop or the Argentines develop, because it ain't going to happen. They have actual team training environments there.
Wait, so they don't do play, practice, play there, Gary?
Fucking Christ. Look, if I want to be charitable, I just know that they're not this bright, Ben, because I know these people and they know what I think of them. I tell them to their face. I've been telling them to their face forever. So I'm not saying something that they don't already know. If I was being charitable, one could say, well, they know all of this that I just spent an hour talking about, or we spent an hour talking about. And they're like, well, it's too hard, Gary, for the youth coaches to do the right thing. So we're a federation. It's too hard. So the least harm that a coach can do is to just let the kids play. So we're trying to have coaches not harm kids by doing stupid stuff with their incompetence. And so the best, most responsible thing for us to do is just kind of tell everybody, hey, whoa, whoa, don't try and be Pep. Don't try and be La Masia. Let the kids play.
You're being too charitable.
I don't think that's what it is, obviously. I think they're part of the dumb ones that we've been describing.
Well, if there was a place where coaches can go and witness somebody that's actually executed this at every level of the game in American soccer, see him in his own personal team training environment, not manufactured bullshit that you see on YouTube, with his real teams and real players, bossing possession, dominating American soccer. If only there was a place that somebody could go, Gary.
This is where you make a big flashing ad, right? Yeah, you go to 343coaching.com. You know, and how this all came about is, you know, I published our first ever YouTube video, which is still on the channel. You can go see it. It has over, I don't know, 1.5 million views. I don't even know anymore. I published that thing in, I believe it was 2012. And it was just me having filmed Brian's game, U11 game. And I'm like, oh, how do I use YouTube? How do I edit a video? And I just cut a couple clips. I wasn't trying to market anything whatsoever. I didn't do anything, right? I just cut a couple clips of actions that I thought were kind of nice. I uploaded this 12-minute video and it garnered over 1 million views in like a month, and the Spanish papers and the English papers and the European papers and South American papers picked it up somehow, right? It went viral, and they started writing articles in those countries saying, wow, it looks like the Americans finally know how to play soccer. And so what happened was I started getting bombarded by a bunch of American coaches saying, hey, Gary, how are you guys doing this? Teach us. And I'm like, it's impossible to teach you. How can I teach you? This is impossible. And then I thought about it more and more and more, and they kept bombarding me. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll give it a try. So I started filming Brian's training sessions and miking him up during the different exercises, during matches, during halftime talks, during everything. And then I stitched a whole curriculum together with that content and published it. And lo and behold, 343coaching.com was born. Hundreds and then thousands of coaches joined the program. Countless testimonials since then. Gary, you changed my coaching life. Gary, this is incredible. Amazing. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess we're onto something here. And, you know, what was that? 2013, or when I launched it, the end of 2013. We're here over a decade later, going strong. There's been a wave of kind of like a revolution in this country, I think. There has been a lot of positive things that have occurred with MLS Youth Academies, with the U.S. Soccer Development Academy, with other big clubs around the country where they started deploying this thing. But we still have a long way to go. Otherwise, we wouldn't have made this episode. Otherwise, we still wouldn't be having to combat these lame narratives that exist. Otherwise, we wouldn't have to combat like, oh yeah, well, Spain won, but it's so boring. The problem persists, Ben.
Yeah, and by the way, if France had won, this does not make everything that we just said wrong.
No.
Right? Possession is still the possession is the way, man. It's the only way.
Oh, one more thing, and then let's sign off because Argentina is about to play England, and I'm probably going to go dark for a long time because I'm not optimistic, okay? Last remark. Stop looking at statistics, people. Looking at statistics, I understand that there's a learning curve, and myself included, everybody goes through this learning curve, and it all kind of looks identical. In the very beginning, you look at statistics, and you look at numbers, and you draw conclusions from numbers. You can't draw conclusions from numbers without good context. And your context, your capability for context gets better and better and better the older you get, the more experience you get, the more wisdom you get. So to put a nice bow on this, if you look at the statistics of yesterday's game, France and Spain, I think it was like practically 50-50 in possession. And we finished saying that Spain was the possession team and that's how they won. Yes, that's accurate. And just because it says 50-50 possession, it doesn't tell the story of what happened in the match. Okay?
Sounds good, Gary. Last, you can make it one sentence. Where do the parents go to learn about all of this stuff, Gary?
Yeah. So for the parents, obviously, we're not going to teach you how to be coaches, but we package everything that we've learned and the coaching stuff as well into a parent education sort of program so that you develop a discerning eye for what is good football, what is bad football, what is good development, what is bad development, what you should be on look for, what you should be cautious about so you can better guide and mentor your son or daughter. And you go to 343masterclass.com for that program.
And even if you have the little ones for coaches, 7v7.
Oh, 7v7. Yeah, last one is 7v7coaching.com if you're coaching in the 7v7 environment. It's weird. And for those of you who are new to us in this environment, it sounds like a whole freaking ad that we just did. It's not an ad. We're just educators. And, you know, we have a solution. It'd be kind of irresponsible for us to not offer the solution. And if I cared so much about money, right? Money, this, money, that, or whatever, I would have aligned myself with the MLS monopoly. I would not be anti-establishment. By being anti-establishment, I don't get broad distribution from the media, from the power brokers. I don't. And I made a conscious effort. What do I want to do? Do I want to make money? Yes or no? Because if I want to make money, I would align myself with the monopoly. I'd say, this is the way, guys, but MLS is awesome. US soccer is awesome. American soccer is, everything's awesome, you know, and we're helping. I would have 10 times the audience, Benny. I'm not kidding. 10 times the audience and 10 times the business. But I would be lying to you. I'd be a low-life scumbag if I did that, which is what I see all around me here in American soccer. I wouldn't be able to look myself in the mirror. So what did I do consciously? I'm like, no, that's not true. MLS is the problem. It is a cancer. US soccer is corruptly controlled by MLS. And this is just reality. And so as a consequence of that, I'm not distributed. I have 10 times less the audience, 10 times less the business. So just keep that in mind, guys, also.
Thank you for your service, Gary.
This is just how I live my life, man. I don't care.
Most would choose the alternative.
Of course.
Make money.
Of course.
Influence.
Of course. Of course, man. Of course. And there's nothing wrong with having a business. There's nothing wrong with, quote unquote, making money. If you thought there's something wrong, go to your employer tomorrow. If you're employed by somebody, say, no, it's cool. You don't have to pay me. I do it for the goodness of, I don't know. I believe in making pencils. Pencils are vital to humanity. I'm going to do it for the betterment of humanity. You don't have to pay me. Or if you run your own show, you're self-employed or whatever, say, no. I'll offer my services for free. For those people who demonize coaches, coaches are in it for the money. First off, they're not making money. They're poor. And secondly, it's unconscionable that you would tell a coach or want a coach to do it for free. He's offering a service. He's offering his time, energy, effort, and expertise. We all understand this. If you're watching this and you're retired and you're getting a social security check, are you getting this? Say, no. It's okay. There are people who are in more need of this stuff. Don't pay me. So if anybody's wondering about, well, Gary, you have all this stuff, just give it away. You want me to give away my time, energy, effort, expertise, decades worth of sacrifice? Just give it away. And secondly, more important than that, Ben, people value what they pay for. If you are not willing to open your wallet and make an exchange, right, of energy, you're giving me some of your energy and I give you back some of my energy. If you're not willing to do that, then you're not serious and you won't be committed. People don't value free stuff. Okay, Argentina, fuck me. What's going to happen today?
I really don't know, Gary. I really don't know.
Well, you've changed your mind because yesterday you said, I'm sorry, Gary, but I think England's going to win.
I still think England, but this is just a game. First of all, this game, I don't think I've been more excited for a game the entire World Cup than this specific one. Just because of the history and the politics and the scandals and it's rigged for Messi. And I just want to see this game play out. It's going to be an emotional game on both sides. I think I told you yesterday, like, I'm predicting a game like Argentina-Netherlands where it gets heated, bro.
There's going to be a red card, Ben, for sure.
I'm sticking with England.
Okay.
I really like Tuchel, man. I watched his entire press conference yesterday.
Yes.
I would advise the audience to do the same. If you're still here, you're still listening, but that guy is a proper manager. And I wanted to bring this up today, but it didn't really fit in the conversation. His whole discussion of roles, like what is your role within the team? And he goes on like a 4 or 5 minute long rant about how everybody has accepted their role in the team and why that's been able to help. But I would advise go listen to that guy, man. That guy's I like him a lot.
No, proper manager. You can tell that there is a depth of expertise and wisdom there, like super deep that he's just extracting some oil from to answer these questions. Like there's way more oil down there. But he's extracting you and giving you something. Benny, can you notice the difference between his press conference and the oil that he provides versus when you listen to like an American MLS manager, a Greg Berhalter or something like that? Do you know, or maybe you never even listen to those guys, but can you tell that the depth and richness that exists is worlds apart? Or can you tell that there's any difference?
I could tell personally. I don't know if other people would be able to tell, but no, I mean, it just seems like, man, not even just Berhalter, like fucking any MLS coach that you see at a prof, Steve Cherundolo. I've seen some conferences of his at LAFC, and it's all just like word vomit coming out of their mouths, and they already have their established narratives in their head that they want to get out there, and their talking points. Like when you see when the reporters are asking Tuchel, he gives a response fast, but you could tell he's internalizing and like really in his mind trying to come up with the best answer, you know?
Yeah.
It's not bullshit. He's saying what he feels and what he sees.
Yeah, yeah. And from experience, he just knows, man.
Yeah.
And he's aware of his potential blind spots too. So you saw when Tuchel was asked about man marking Messi.
He smiled, but you saw
that his brain was processing. And it's not that I'm a mind reader, guys. It's just like humans are very good at detecting this sort of stuff. You saw he was processing and he's like, okay, I'll tell him. Yeah, I actually have considered that. Who knows? It's possible that Messi is men marked. We'll see.
I was laughing just because the way that the guy was asking the question, Tuchel was kind of like, what the fuck? But then he realized like, oh, yeah, well, it is Messi, so.
No, Ben, the way he answered was sincere and legitimate. He did think about doing that.
Yeah.
The man marking. And maybe his smirk, we're going to find out. Maybe his smirk was like, he had decided he is going to do that.
Yeah.
And he smirked. He's like, oh shit, you know, how do I answer this?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So are you still standing by your prediction? Your prediction was England scores first, Argentina scores, Argentina wins in penalties.
Yeah, I said that for fun, right? I said, hey, I don't know what's going to happen. I know England. I feel England is better, just better. Player for player is better, and they have an edge. But yeah, man, I said, okay, but for fun, this I feel maybe this. could happen. That is the rosiest picture I can, I'll put it to you this way. That's the rosiest picture I can paint for Argentina. That tells you how much of an underdog I think Argentina is.
Yeah.
Where the rosiest picture is, we get scored on first because we're worse. We're not a better team. And then we scrap back because we at least have enough quality and hierarchy, right? Jerarquía, we say in Argentina, where the jersey weighs a lot, right? The brand has power, and somehow we claw back a goal. So it'll be 1-1. And then we barely survive overtime, maybe with 10 men. We barely survive with 10 men. And then we get to penalties and we're saved in penalties. So imagine, it's a disastrous game for Argentina, but that's the rosiest picture I can paint. And for fun.
We'll see what happens, man. It's going to be fun, though.
It's not going to be fun. It's going to be fun for you. It's not going to be fun for me.
Well, listen, the only reason that I've always had doubts about England is because as a kid growing up, right, watching World Cups, you always hear, you know, it's coming home. You see them do well for a couple games, and they're like, it seems like they're so close. And everybody starts saying, it's coming home, it's coming home. And then they choke.
The only silver lining that I will take, I don't know if it's the only one, it's the one that comes to mind, if Argentina were to lose, is that we can maybe start squashing this idiotic narrative that, oh, a foreign manager isn't the right decision for a national team. You got a German manager for England, of all places, and he's gotten them farther than they've gotten in God knows how long and performing far better than they performed in God knows how long.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say the rigging. It's rigged for Messi to squash.
Oh, no. Who cares? I don't care. They can say, they're going to say that no matter what. Those people can eat crow.
You know, watch the game in your garage or what?
No. I'm alone, so I'll be able to watch in silence and suffer in silence.
I wish you the best of luck, man.
All right, brother. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.